And now I'm recording, so this is the informal meetup in Buenos, we're still in Buenos Aires, at the school, which has very interesting ceilings and interesting interpretations of famous art on the wall, which is quite fun. I like that. And a group of people. So just so you all know, I am recording, so if you say anything, there will be evidence. And I'll share it on my blog. I'll try not to be recording video anyway. So I love those. How long are you able to record on that? How much time?
2 hours.
2 hours? It was better than mine then.
Yeah, si quieren, esta no se olvida.
Because the audio is going to have that chair is looking like crap.
Yeah. Okay. So now I get the super giant Santa Claus chair. Oh, that's funny. So.
I'm going to take the audio. So you need motors.
There we go. Oops, you moved your head. Don't move your head. Very still. That's better.
Not everybody speaks English.
Oh, yeah. Ni hablo picante español.
You speak any other language?
French.
No. Oh, yes.
Qui peut parler français?
No, but that's first.
Tout le monde peut parler en français? No?
Un petit peu.
Un petit peu. Okay.
I can take out these
ones. So. And if people are listening on audio, especially in France, I need to practice my French. Just saying.
Don't feel bad.
Because I've never been to France. No. So, and it's funny because you think of Canadians, you think the first place they go to is England, right? And they did. And then the next place they go to is France. But I never went to France.
And you've been everywhere?
No, I haven't.
No?
No. And I was joking with Alejandro about that. I haven't been to Brazil, Russia, India, or China. So, like, the four major nations in the world, pretty much. Yeah, I've never been to any of them. So I've lived my life on the fringes.
Soon.
Oh. Not mine. Mine's turned off. So, I'm not sure what to do for people who don't speak English. Maybe somebody can translate to sort of just on the fly. Yeah. And you can, like, when I say something and when you try to, you can make stuff up.
Some people understand, and that's a problem.
Oh, well, that's true, yeah.
That's creative moments there.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Gloria Cerezo.
Yes, well, I'm Gloria Cerezo. FC blog on Twitter. I'm a picture shy one. And the part that set me rethinking say was the public knowledge and this private knowledge part. And it reminded me of the moment when I share what I do with other teachers at school, at a language school. I teach English as a foreign language. Camilla works with me. And now everyone is more interested in technology, right? Now they bought the interactive whiteboard, and so let's look at what Claudia has been doing with that blog and that wiki. And so they ask me, when I see the students enthusiastic about it, how do you do it? And any question that begins with how, I don't know how to explain, you know? So when I tell them what I've been trying to create for my class, actually what I plan never happens.
Right.
So, if my manager is asking me, I feel what I'm explaining is how I improvise. But it doesn't sound very good to say that to your manager at school. But I feel I'm becoming, at best, an expert improviser. And it's very difficult to explain. So then I try to make students see some of the advantages of using blog, but it's never homework. My premise to them is, this is there, you can use things that you can learn autonomously, if you can, if not, you ask me. Sometimes they bring the topic or not, but you spend time writing that blog, and maybe one or two out of 15 in a class probably profit from it. And I think that's successful, anyway, I'm relaxed about that. But then, when you want to share with others, and again, this question of how, I say, well, to what extent is informal learning can be planned? Can it be planned? Or is just design? I can just design this context. Some things will happen, some things not. So the question will be that, to what extent can we plan these things to happen in the classroom, informal instances of learning? Yeah.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because every student is different, and even the same student is different from day to day. So something that will work for a student one day, even later in the day, won't work anymore. You know, first thing Friday morning, sure. Friday afternoon, forget it. You know, and I think this is true of knowledge work in general. It's not just true of teaching. I think it's true of writing. It's certainly true for me when I do presentations. You look at the presentations, they're all different. It's not always because I have something different to say, but because it's a different day, it's a different audience, I'm different. I need to say something a bit differently. So you can't have, you know, a plan. Well, I mean, you can have a plan, but then it'll fall apart. It's like they say, the best laid plans fall upon first contact. You know, I was trying to make a non-military analogy out of a military one, but, you know, your best strategy falls apart with contact with the enemy. I hate military strategy. Well, I liked military strategy, but as a game, not as an analogy. Sorry, I'm wondering. So what do we have then? You can't script it. You know, learning design is in that way a fallacy. You know, you can't say first we'll do this, then we'll do this with any degree of precision. Just things change, you have to adapt. So what we can learn, isn't it a noisy little thing?
No battery.
Your battery is dead?
I have mine.
I have spare batteries. I actually do have spare batteries if you need them. And so does she. But it's okay, we'll still have the audio recording. So if you look at what people who work habitually in very dynamic environments do, like say skiers or surfers or fencers, not people who build fences, but people who, I studied that once, right? If you can picture that, me fencing. I had to give it up. I was too big a target. But what they do is they have a repertoire of basic moves that they make. Comedians are like this too. I love comedians. You know, especially when you're in the audience, you tweak a comedian, you can just see, oh yeah, click, and the run. So you have your moves, the things that you do, the habitual things that you might say, elder people have their stories, oh, that reminds me when, and so that's what informal anything really consists of. It's, you spend a lot of time, a long time, training and practicing in order to acquire this repertoire. And then when you actually engage in it, it's just, almost, I don't want to say instinctive or habitual, but that's what it is, right? A habitual, you just pull from your repertoire and you just recognize. I talked about that recognition. Knowledge is recognition. I think in Rosario and yesterday in that place, the name of which I've forgotten, but is
Pilar.
Yeah, Pilar. Yes. Knowledge is recognition. You recognize this technique would be appropriate here. If you're surfing, right, now's the time to roll. Now's the time to duck. Now's the time to dive into the water or I'm going to die, right? You didn't recognize the right move to make. And then it becomes like an improvisation. In theater, we have theater sports in Canada. Have you ever heard of theater sports?
Yeah.
Oh, you have? Oh.
It's called improv match.
Sure, yeah. So.
Match improvisation. We shout titles at
you. Yeah. And then you can tell, right? They shout titles and then you can see something tweaks. In the performer's mind, and they go, oh yeah, and away they go. So it's like theater sports, it's like jazz, and again, one person will play off another, and then that will lead them, oh yeah, I'll do this riff, I'll go this way, I'll do a D chord, whatever. I don't know music very well, so I'm making all that stuff up. But that's informal. It's not formless, it's not shapeless, but it's not structured. It's a selection of learned responses on the basis of recognition of a familiar pattern of events or circumstances.
And nada sale como lo había planificado. Entonces, finalmente se siente como que improvisa y un poco está buscando la validación de esta improvisación. Y lo que dice Stephen es que a lo largo de los años de la docencia uno desarrolla un repertorio en donde va utilizando distintas estrategias y ya sabe cuál es el momento de hacer tal o cual cosa, de sacar tal abajo la manga o de hacer, de hundirte, de sumergirte o hundirte. Y las distintas cosas que van pasando, que van surgiendo. Y dice que es como un comediante en el escenario que ya tienen ciertas líneas, ciertos gags que a los que vuelven y van y vuelven saben que funcionan y en qué situaciones, con qué tipo de público. Y todo esto es porque los alumnos son distintos entre ellos y distintos ellos mismos en cada momento del día, incluso. Básicamente, ¿no?
Este escrito de, no se hace la pregunta en inglés, ¿no? Este escrito de improvisación, ¿no? Este comediante,
sí.
Esto tiene que ser alguien sí o sí con muchísima experiencia. No puede ser una persona que acaba de empezar.
So what happens with the teacher when they're just starting? Because this person has to have a repertoire and have to have those skills.
Yeah, and that's why teachers typically do a practicum in the classroom first. They do student teaching, right? They'll do, while they're learning to be a teacher, they'll do improvisation, sort of like practice teaching with each other. And it's not to remember, you know, information or content. It's to begin to practice, almost like exercising, to develop these skills, this repertoire. And what'll happen, especially when you pair inexperienced teachers with experienced teachers, is that the inexperienced teacher observes the experienced teacher and almost habitually will begin to imitate them. And me, I'm very imitative. I'm terrible at, like, you put me, it's funny because I read a book and I start talking like the author of the book. So if people hated me when I was reading Wittgenstein, because I would talk in these short little paragraphs that you had to really think about to understand, but I thought I was so smart. But that's what you do, right? And that's how you learn. And for teachers, they need the exposure to, professional teachers, but you know what I mean. Experienced teachers, master teachers, and they need to watch them teaching other people and themselves sometimes, and then get the practice, and then they're able to go into a class. And, you know, they're going to be really bad for the first few years, too. You know, it's like anything. You know, your first year of anything, you're not very good at it. That's just life, you know. And you try not to do too much damage. And you probably won't, because people are pretty adaptable. But you know, really, it's getting into practice. After 3 or 4 years, you've pretty much got it. You've developed your repertoire, and now it's sort of honing and making things better.
Sometimes
we don't need
volunteers.
Yeah. Let's watch.
Sorry, sorry.
We'll all watch the new people come in. So anyhow, thank you very much for coming, and it's nice that you are here. Now to wrap up. They don't get it. Hi, Jennifer. How you see?
Sometimes another tendency I see online is teachers finding a tool, and now you can say this question of experience, and immediately, what can we do with this in the classroom?
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes to explain why you're not experimenting with 200 tools, and in 4 years I lose it in the classroom. But those are the ones try to use or find some pedagogical aspect to it, which then when I develop an activity with my idea and what then actually happens in the classroom, whatever made me very enthusiastic about it at first may mean nothing to the student.
Yeah.
And they look at you like, wow, I can tell you're fascinated about it, but they don't get it. So it's difficult. This is not exactly contagious. You need to make them see or let them find something useful for them.
Yeah, I think let them find is probably the best description. Because, you know, they've experienced the world in different ways. You know, it's like me, I did not experience the world through telephones. Which is ironic, because my father spent 25 years working for the telephone company. But I did not have a phone for, well, almost all of my university career. I had no phone. I got a phone only once I started to teach by telephone. And I needed one. Yeah, that was my introduction to all of this. I was teaching by telephone. I started working with Athabasca University. You may have heard of that. It's where Terry Anderson is and George Siemens is. And a bunch of other people. Rory McGreal is there. Norm Friesen was there, but he's somewhere else now. A bunch of people. Sorry, Athabasca people, if I forgot you. I started there in 1987, teaching over the telephone. How? Well, it was standard, typical, traditional distance education. We would send the students a package of self-study materials, right? So there would be some textbooks, and then a study guide, and they'd work their way through the study guide and do exercises. And then every Tuesday from 7 to 9, and every Thursday, Tuesday 6 to 9, Thursday 7:30 to 9, I was available by telephone. And they could call me. And if they didn't call me, I called them. There was no escape. Right? And they could call me and talk about what they were doing. And basically, they would ask me questions, and I would answer them. Which is why this format works really well for me. Because I had so many years training doing that. And then they would do their assignments, and they would mail them in. I would mark them, and I would mail them back.
What did you teach?
Philosophy. Critical thinking. Logic.
And they still do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
In Australia, New Zealand, but where do the students live?
Everywhere.
Everywhere in the country.
Across Canada.
Right.
So it was interesting because Athabasca was designed to provide an education for people who lived in the country, rural students. But most of the students lived in the city. And it was people who did not have time to go to a regular class or had children at home or things like that.
So it was distance learning?
Yeah. Oh, it was distance learning. Yeah, pure and simple distance learning.
Philosophy on the phone sounds very much to point out, I would say.
Very much what?
It works.
They also teach Spanish to Australians on the phone.
Sure. And now I'm picturing an Australian with an Australian accent speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
Hola, mate.
And what happens with the reform outside? Because we were saying individualization only back to it. Or the repertoire.
Yeah.
What happens to reform outside?
Well, yeah, I don't know what happens to reform outside. Well, I mean, I think gradually the informal will replace large elements of the formal. And there's two aspects to the formal side. See that? Using the rule of four, rule of two. I always do this. People used to, they thought they hated me in student newspaper meetings, right? Because, you know, we'd have our editorial meetings. We're very activist, and, you know, like, right? And I would have the floor, and I'd say, I want to make 3 points. And they go, no. Because they knew I'd be going for the next 15 minutes. Anyhow. Formal consists of two elements. The first is the teaching. And that, you know, it's sort of analogous to the guided tour when you visit a city. And there's always still a place for a guided tour. Because there's always going to be people who really aren't able or equipped to explore a city by themselves. Right? Maybe they're old. You know, maybe they're in a wheelchair. Maybe they're nervous and afraid. That's very common. Maybe they're very young. Well, all kinds of reasons, right?
Special intelligence.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Special intelligence. Well, thank you.
Maybe we know more.
So, but that's just one way of exploring a city. There's so many other ways. You could take a bus tour. One of those hop on, off, off. Alejandro keeps saying, you take the bus tour, right? It'll take you all the major places. He doesn't know me that well, because I'm not a tour person at all.
No.
If I was going to do anything, I'd take a city bus, because I don't know where it's going to go, but I know it's not going to go to all the statues. It's going to go to the housing developments and the shopping malls and the places where people work. Or I might take the subway to the end stop and then walk around the end, although I don't always do that. you really should know where you're going first. Or what I do personally is I just walk around in the city. And, you know, my sense of direction is very good, so I don't get lost. So I just start from the hotel. I walk around until I get tired, and then I work my way back to the hotel. And I don't know what I'll discover that way, but that's the way I explore. So that's what will happen with instruction. Is right now, all of our instruction is formal, but it will split. It will divide into all of these different types. And different people will do different things. The other side of formal education is the evaluation system.
Yeah.
And it's because of the evaluation system that our current education system remains structured the way it is now. At some point, and this will happen, the teaching will be separated from the evaluation. It's gonna happen. There's so many reasons why it's going to happen, but the main reason it's going to happen is the teaching will, on the one hand, become too expensive, and on the other hand, become too cheap. And you might think, wait a sec, that's a ridiculous, crazy contradiction. Teaching in traditional schools will become too expensive. You know, even the United States can't afford to pay its teachers. Right? So, there's a problem there. On the other hand, you can take a course, a connectivist course, for example, for free. So it becomes very cheap. So both of those things will push evaluation apart from teaching. And then you'll have the formal state or provincial evaluation. There'll be prior learning and recognition of previous learning, things like that. There'll be tests that you can write, and that'll be more and more common. I could imagine, for example, if I was, which I am, so it's a retirement plan, right? A qualified philosopher saying, I'll test you in philosophy. And my reputation is based on how good the people I pass are, right? So, but I'm not teaching, I'm just testing, right? You come to me, prove to me you're a philosopher. And if you prove to me you're a philosopher, I'll give you a grade. And your grade is based on my reputation, and my reputation is based on the performance of all of the different students. So we're going to see more and more of that. And it's going to be tricky and complex. It's going to be hard to keep track of. You know, we will need good information systems, but gradually the assessment system also will become less and less a unified system and more a broken apart system. So I think that's what happens to formal education. It gradually over time becomes a smaller and smaller part of our educational system.
Uno es
pasan, digamos, el examen con él, son buenos.
can do it says to me that I'm using way too many words.
You said 2 points and I missed the first one completely. I don't think of the example, I'm lost.
Yes, it's something concrete, you know.
The value
of narratives. Yeah, that's true. But the example, I gave you an example, the tour.
Yeah, but I forgot it.
Oh, yeah.
It's Friday evening.
Yeah, it's Friday evening. Yeah. We get the results we should expect. The only other thing would be if we were all drinking beer.
What about dishonesty, corruption? Can
you be
straightforward? What about all that? It exists.
Oh, yeah, no, count on it. I mean, there's no simple answer, right? It's, you know, I'm trying to come up with a simple answer, and it's not going to happen. But, you know, so I mean, you have to address it in different ways. You know, it's a social void kind of issue. I try to address the causes of it. You know, why do people become corrupt? Why do they cheat? Why are they dishonest? You know, what is the advantage? You know, and sometimes the advantage isn't even real. Sometimes it's just perceived. But they do it because they think there's a reason. And so the first response is to remove the reason. You know, we have a system now that allows you to get ahead by gaming the system as well as by learning, right? So there is an incentive to cheat because you can succeed. So, over time, we want a system where you can't succeed by cheating. And, you know, it's kind of hard to do. I think I'll say it this way. The more complex something is, the harder it is to fake it. Right? Think about, well, any complex behavior. Ballet. Ballet is very complex. Right? It's nothing I would try. Right? You can't fake it. You know? Right. Well, you can do it more or less well, but you cannot fool somebody into believing that you can do it, right? So, when we're evaluating whether somebody can do ballet, what do we do? Do we ask them a series of questions about ballet? No, because you can fake that, right? Or do you ask them to do ballet? We ask them to do ballet, the actual practice. And I think, you know, the reason we haven't asked people to do ballet is because it's been too hard. You know, you need somebody who's qualified to tell whether or not a person, because me, I can't judge, right? You might be able to fool me, you know, not at the gross level, but, you know, at the higher level, you know. I can tell whether somebody can do ballet or not, but I can't tell, you know, an A1 from an A2 because I don't know what to look for. All right, so yeah, the higher levels you need experts. It gets more difficult. It takes time. It takes work. If you have a class of 500 people and you want to determine whether they're geographers, well, how are you going to do that, right? You know, okay, Fred, you go be a geographer, and we'll watch you for 30 days. And okay, now person number two just wouldn't work, right? But, so we ask them questions. So we give them tests. Because it's the only way to evaluate a large number of people at once. But people fool the system. They cheat in any manner of way, even if they're not cheating. They can fool the system. I would bet you, I would put money on this. I really would. If you gave me a multiple choice test in Spanish on a subject I don't know, five choices, right? No penalty for wrong answer, because that's too hard. I can pass the test. I could. Because I'm really good at taking tests. Yeah. I'm really good at quizzes. Just generically. We have a quiz show, or not a show, but a game, that is played in pubs, in bars, and taverns in North America. It's called NTN Trivia. It's a trivia game. And I played that lots. I was, believe it or not, and this is true, the North American champion at NTN Trivia. So, and that means I was good at answering questions even in subjects I didn't know anything about, because it's a quiz. And my wife Andrea was also North American champion just after me. So it's funny, like I was over the summer and then she was over the fall. It was great. It's really neat to think I can take quizzes better than every person in the United States. and in Canada. And a few bars in Mexico. So, and I think they don't have it anywhere else. So I was world champion. You take what you can get. So, but we don't have to do that anymore, do we? See, we always used to have teachers mark students, but why do we need to do that? We can tell whether somebody performs because now they can go into the community and do their performance in the community as a whole. And you can't fool the community as a whole. And better, even more convenient, many people can be tested at the same time in the same space. What do you do? You get a bunch of geographers together, experienced ones, new ones, you put them in a room and have them talk about geography. And then at the end of the session, you say, okay guys, who do you think knows geography here? And you'll be able to tell. You'll be able to recognize from that sort of process who is a good geographer and who isn't. Because, you know, they've done things, they've talked about terminal moraines, and they've talked about urban population distributions, they've talked about, central business districts, concentric circle theories of population, I said in geography, you see, they've drawn maps, they've done isobars and iso, etc., right? And you can tell, you could even tell from that little bit that I've studied some geography, because I could not pull that off without studying geography. So I think that's the simple answer to the long question that I said there was no simple answer for. You address cheating by complex evaluation, and you create complex evaluation by conducting your evaluation in a community. I'm looking at you because I know you're this now. And your translation would be about three sentences.
Just the last one, I think.
I did try to summarize.
Well,
I
have to leave, sorry.
Thanks for coming.
Invita a que haya corrupción porque las evaluaciones se hacen en grandes grupos y no se tiene en cuenta la individualidad. O sea, para lograr esto, lograr que esté grande y corresponda de un modo eficiente a una prueba estandarizada, existen los quiebres en el sistema. O sea, se intenta.
There's no word in Spanish for
sí,
cheat.
Sí.
Yes.
What is it?
Hacer trampa, porque it's not just cheating, but copying, any kind of...
Estafar?
Sure. Okay.
servicio.
¡Bufé! Sino, bueno, sé filósofo, sé geógrafo.
Querés, y dice que cuanto al ser fácil, es como lo que va del ballet. Cuando se complejiza, no podés
copiar.
Fingirlo.
Es fingir, es la
no
palabra.
No podés fingir que sabe de ballet.
Pero si le preguntás que sabes de ballet, sí.
Pero ¿qué pasa? Para evaluar a quién sabe y no sabe ballet, necesitas ser bueno vos en ballet, muy bueno. Como docente, digamos, o como evaluador.
Claro.
Si no, no podés saber, no podés juzgar quién es bueno y quién es no.
Y la puesta a prueba de que poner esa profesional, digamos, en la comunidad. La comunidad, a todos nos los podés engañar, si sos bueno o nadie.
No hay forma de... O sea, si vos le decís a una persona, contestame todas estas preguntas sobre ballet, puede. Pero bueno, y ahora bailá.
Saltame.
¿Have you ever worked with kids?
No. Well, actually, no, that's not completely true. I was a Boy Scout camp counselor, but I was pretty young at the time. But I did work with people who were younger with me. They were very young. They would be like 8 to 10 years old. Is that? You know, I'm not trying to remember the ages, but they were very young. But that's a long time
primary
ago.
Primary school.
Yeah, they were Cub Scouts. And I forget the ages offhand of Cub Scouts. I don't know if you have Scouts here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, and you have different levels. So in Canada we have Cub Scouts, and then Scouts, and then Venturers, which are older. They're almost adults. And so, yeah, I was a counselor. We had Cub Scouts. We went canoeing and sailing and things like that. We did crafts. There were lots of discipline issues, but not teaching them, per se. No, the youngest I've actually taught would be college age, you know, first year college or first year university. And so that's, you know, 17, 18, 19. That's probably the youngest.
We're always having the question about how to do something open, like with the connectivism.
Mm-hmm.
Take it to the school, and take it to the classroom, and take it to kids with 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
How? They all have that question.
Yeah. Suponiendo que él suponga que ella está en la escuela, en donde, según lo que yo entiendo, digamos, un joven bailarín es aquel que se pone a bailar y baila bien, y un buen filósofo es aquel que filosofa, ¿sí? O sea,
imagine you're already out of the place where the dancer is already dancing,
yeah.
And the philosopher is already philosophizing.
Una escuela que piensa así, o sea, que va a evaluar a una persona porque puede usar eso que aprendió y sí. Lo puede poner en práctica. No solamente lo repite y lo rehace, sino lo resignifica. Que parte de esa base.
So you're starting from the idea that the person that you're going to be dealing with already resignifies the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't only remember and repeat, but also resignifies.
Y donde se evalúa eso, se evalúa que va a presentar en un contexto distinto.
That's the evaluation that he can, this kid can apply this knowledge to a different context.
En ese contexto, la tecnología. No sé si la pregunta es el lugar, si qué lugar le da él exactamente en un contexto que ya está dado así a la tecnología. ¿Modifica en algo o por qué?
Where would you put technology in a context like this, in a kid like this, that's learning, already learning?
En donde ya se trabaja así.
Like this, in this way.
That's a good question. I don't always know the answers to these things. So, and this one, really, I'd have to think about quite a bit.
This is the kind of school we have here.
Yeah.
I have an answer for that. Can I try?
Better than me.
No. I'm using your words.
That's fine.
He's always speaking about personalizing education. Maybe tech lets people be more what they need to do or be with learning. If someone needs more images, they can use camera instead of writing or reading. Right,
can I add something to that? Technology is part of their lives, especially when
they're kids. Yeah, that's the
case. You can't do without, no puedes evitar la tecnología. For us,
no lo entiendo. El de que enseña, aparte del que aprende, en un contexto en donde esto se da, y en donde la tecnología la tenemos que aprender los adultos.
That, what she means is that we, as adults, have to learn technology to be able to...
Nosotros sabemos hacerlo sin la
tecnología. We know how to do it without technology. So,
es una manera de decir, ¿no? Sin la tecnología. Sí. Sin darle el lugar que él le está dando. Sí.
Without, like, putting it, giving it such a, like, big...
O sea, ¿cómo hacer entrar la tecnología para explotar al máximo eso que ya hacemos?
If I was in that situation, okay, I'm just telling you what I would do. It might fail completely, but... But what I would...
She's mentioning the fact that mistakes are what we learn from. So
yeah.
If you fail, that would be great.
Yeah. But what I would do is try to learn from the student.
And,
yeah, and I'm doing two things here. It's a rule of two. I'm doing two things. The first thing I'm doing is I'm actually trying to learn from the student. I want them to show me, right? Show me the game, show me the tool, show me the application, you know. Show me what you do with it, show me what it's good for. Let me practice. You know what I mean? The second thing, the sneaky, subversive thing, is I am showing them how I learn. Because that's the thing that you really can't explicitly teach to somebody, no matter what age they are. You can't really explicitly teach them how to learn. You know, you can give them tips and tricks and things, but they have to see someone learning. You know, and the only people they ever see in their classes who are learning are other 9-year-olds. It's not very good role model. Right? But if they see you learning, then they say they're able to acquire that capacity from you. They begin to imitate what you're doing. They might not even want to imitate what you're doing, but that's how their minds work. They won't be able to help it. It's very sneaky.
And what about learning through games? Because, for example, this year I have a position at school, and I teach the whole school. I teach English with technology. And I'm facing a problem where they all want to learn English through games. Like, everything is game-based, and I don't know the games, and they keep teaching me new games, and you know, my head is like, I'm a little dizzy with all the new games. So games are wonderful for them, really good, and I am exactly in this process where they love to teach me something new.
Yeah.
I always thought about saying, I don't know, this is new for me. And today I had a perfect class where I was teaching Twitter to 4th grader. It was just unbelievable, the questions they were asking me.
That's great, yeah.
Well, but I have this since, I don't know what's happened to this new generation. I try to analyze it, you know, it's very difficult. But teaching fifth-year-old children, it's all game-based and everything is 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, isn't it?
It's very hard. And yeah. I don't know, I feel that something is not working in a traditional classroom because they don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to leave.
There's two things happening here. Well, no, there's only one thing. I'm just kidding. You see, I just fall into that habit, right? This is what happens when you do things long enough, right? Any question I have, I begin by analyzing it. I look at the different, and I break it down. And it just gives me a way of dealing with it. I have to stop.
It's clear. It's clear.
You are winning time.
Well, that's true.
you just have one to say, but you leave one in case something else comes up.
That's, yeah. That's what happened in this case, yeah. But.
Well, they love it in France. When you go to France, they would love it.
Oh, okay. J'ai deux points à faire maintenant. Oh. there was, for a long time, and still we are told that we need to keep our things in digital form short. Short videos, short text, you know, so like, probably educators hate my audio recordings. My audio recording's like an hour, 2 hours. You've got to be dedicated to listen to my stuff. You really do. Thank you for being so dedicated, those of you listening in audio. And yeah, okay, I see that. Digital media is very intensive. It's very engaging. But I don't completely buy this entire everything must be 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And the reason why I say that, I play a game called Civilization. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
I love this game. Right, so I was like, it was fine, but like military strategy, yeah, it's great for Canada. Civilization actually has a feature where it keeps track of how long you've been playing the game, because you might forget. You know, and I've played games, I sit down and play the game, I get up, it says 24 hours. And I'm like, oh my. And kids are like this too. Like Myst, I don't know if they still play Myst, but they used to play Myst. You set a kid on Myst, you could not separate them. So, and this is this whole idea of, oh, you can't get them to leave the class, right? The games may be short and episodic, but really they're all part of a longer, larger event. And so I really think that this is probably the way we're headed. If they're playing little episodic games, really it'll be a series of them. Or they might be playing, you know, elements of a much larger game, a much longer game. I was introduced to interactive online games in a thing called MUDs. Have you ever heard of MUDs? Mm-hmm. MUD, it's M-U-D, stands for Multi-User Dungeon. Yeah. And these games go on for weeks. Well, there's no end.
Right.
It's a never-ending game. Well, it's not quite never-ending, but you take like months going through it. But they're episodic, right? You log on, you do a quest, you kill some monsters, you log off. So it's episodic, but it's long. I think that's the direction that the computer games will go. The second point, there really were 2 points. Have you seen the recent game that's being has been created by the World Bank called Evote, or Urgent Evote? I signed up for this. I'm pretty interested. It's very professionally done. very good. I found it really annoying. And I found it annoying for two reasons. The first reason was it's very paternalistic. They have, you know, they're trying to be very modern, and so the big master Dr. X is from Africa. How very progressive, right? And so, and so they're being progressive and saying, you know, you're taking your orders from Africa now, not Washington. So the whole world has changed. But it's like, you're taking orders. And this is what happens. Like, every week you get your orders from Dr. X to do some sort of socially progressive activity. Well, that's not what I want kids to learn. And then secondly, the language and the concepts in the game are very, what's a good word? I would say subversive, except it's the World Bank, right? They are the establishment. So if the establishment can do something subversive, that's what it is. You know, for example, one of their evokes was, they call each episode an evoke, right? One of the episodes was, Los Angeles is running short of water. What will we do? And the answer was, well, let's set up some entrepreneurial company so people will have the incentive to buy water. Well, guys, you know, and this is the thing about games that we have to be so careful about. Games hide their semantic meaning. Games hide what you learn from them. There's the gameplay layer, and then there's the semantic layer, the understandings, the behaviors, the activities. And so games can be used very subversively to create values in your children that if you were just teaching them, you would never teach them. Now, maybe you do want to teach them to be entrepreneurs and solve water crises by forming small companies. Me, no, not so much.
Sometimes when you're doing it, you're really a commentary on somebody who has written the 100 best games to be used in education. And if somebody here will know that nowadays games like
James Paul G.
Sorry?
James is the one from Tech Talks.
Maybe. No.
The woman.
Jane.
Oh, Jane Hart.
Jane Hart. No, but it wasn't her.
Wasn't her. It might have been Clark Aldrich.
But yeah. She doesn't know education again.
No. Yeah. I bet you it was Clark Aldrich. I think that's...
Yes,
that's,
I think
yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would that be, I mean, that selection? I went to the selection, but I really cannot tell until I use them.
Yeah.
The kids, for example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just it. You have to play the game yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Play the game, and not just like for an afternoon, right? Play it over a period of time and be reflective and ask, you know, what am I thinking now? How am I solving this? You know, one of my favorite games is SimCity.
Yeah.
And SimCity, again, is very pernicious. You know how you stimulate development in SimCity? You lower taxes. Lower taxes, people start building buildings. Raise taxes, your buildings turn into slums. So I'm sitting there, I'm trying to develop my city. What's my first instinctive reaction? Lower taxes. But wait a second here. That's not how the world works. If you lower taxes to zero, you lose all of your city services. You know, your whole city goes to pot. But in Zen City, it doesn't work that way. Sneaky, 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 sneaky.
Ideology behind the games.
Yeah.
But behind tools as well. Mm-hmm. Baseball has a privacy policy and various
the
purpose of the whole thing.
Well. No technology is neutral. Mm-hmm. I mean, people say, you know, it's about the teaching, it's not about the technology. It's always about the technology. Yeah, it may also be about the teaching, but I'll tell you, teaching with a blackboard is completely different from teaching with a gun. Trust me on this. So you can't say the technology is not important. They're looking very impatient. Somebody else can translate too if you're.
Tiempo determinado para que trabajen con la tecnología, ¿no? Más o menos hasta así.
Sí, que ella notaba que ellos querían cosas cortas y se interesaban.
Pero los juegos, o sea, sale 5 para la normalmente. Sale 5 es, son 10 minutos todas actividades, además que 10 minutos.
Y lo que.
Chico puede estar un día entero jugando, él dice que tiene el mismo juego, de repente te va contando lo que tardás y a veces estás 24 horas, entonces hay juegos donde sí pueden estar mucho tiempo. O sea, para él lo de...
This is strange to me, the fact of the time. Like, when I started with technology, I started quite young, and at home we had Macintosh, so kind of had this brain system that worked. And for me, everything was like begin and end. And it still works like that for me. And I see my kids don't have that problem, my kids at home.
Yeah.
Don't have that thing, that issue. Like, things related to technology for me have to, I keep a blog and everything, but still, I need to start and end. And I don't know, is that changing?
I think so, yeah.
How do you apply it in education?
I apply it personally just by developing habits. I get my newsletter, right? It comes out episodically every day, but, you know, it never ends. it's something I do. And the way I approach it is, I hardly even think of each newsletter as a separate entity. I do, but it just varies. It's just regularly I add to the newsletter. It's just something I do. It's just a way of interacting with the world. It's like, you know, it's like eating never ends, right? Especially here in Argentina. And how do you do that, right? You know. You just make it a part of your life. You know, you just, it's just something you do. In Canada, eating, we have very, like lunch starts at 12 and ends at 1. It doesn't start at 1:30 and end at 8. I'm just kidding. So, you know, it's sort of, we have that thing with starting and ending with food in Canada. I don't know what else you can do, right? You know, it's a mindset, I suppose. It's a way of looking at the world. But like anything, any habits, it feels really awkward at first. It feels wrong and strange. Eating all afternoon felt wrong and strange to me. It felt wrong and strange. You know, but you know, I can get used to it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, Saturdays?
Yeah, well, this was a Saturday.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I was just told. I mean, what the, I don't know. I went to a lunch. It started at 1:30. It went till 8. They said, this is normal. I took their word. Yeah. It was a Saturday. It was very good. Yeah. We had the chorizo course, and then we had the hamburger course, and then we had a little bit of steak on a bun course.
Barbecue,
yeah.
It goes on forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the coffee and the dessert and the coffee again.
Yeah.
And little alfajores.
And now you feel like some new steak, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny for me because, you know, it was a Saturday and I thought, okay, that's fine. Lunch for Saturday, I'll have the rest of the day free. Great.
Yeah.
Well, we got back home, it was like, late. And then what did I got back to my hotel around 9 o'clock, which of course is supper time. Here. So I went and had something to eat. What a day. I was fine.
Yeah.
Well, it worked, yeah. It's something I would never experience any other way, you know. I mean, if I was just a tourist coming here to Argentina, am I going to experience that, really? Probably not, you know. The 9 o'clock supper, yes, because if you, you know, you just, they're just not ready for you at six. I've discovered that.
No, never.
Yeah, so, you know, like, you know, we'll have to start the barbecue for you. So, yeah. But, so, you experience some things, but, it was a way of seeing life here from a perspective that I wouldn't see otherwise, so I appreciated it. Yeah. It was fun. It helped me learn.
So, you should have back to the
day. Oh, normally? Yeah, yeah. Usually, yeah. If I was at home now, I'd be, you know, I'd be wrapping up for the day. This is about the time at home that, you know, I'm having my last decaffeinated coffee. And I've got a book, and I'm going to go upstairs, and I'm going to read my book for a while, and listen to my baseball game on the radio, and spend a little time relaxing before I go to sleep. That's what I do about this time of the day. And it's very nice. You guys don't have baseball here, do you?
Football.
If I
don't go back home, because I have 2 kids.
Yeah.
2 possible scenarios. My husband gets my kids, or my kids.
Either way, you have to clean up the mess. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I have a question about nothing about food. It happens to us that we are facilitating this connectivism course
right.
in Spanish, spirit connectivism, and the spirit is that we are not teaching but trying to write an open agenda of what mm-hmm. we do each week.
Oh, yeah.
And some topics.
I like that.
Some topics are about connectivism, but it's not like it's for teachers, these teachers and many others
mm-hmm.
who are not ICT teachers, yes?
Sure.
So we took that you say, don't think about how can you take technology to the class, but how you can learn with that.
Right.
That's the whole idea. And trying to not teach. What happens is that they hate us. Yes,
they
like,
hate
please,
it.
We need help.
Who? Oh, the teachers hate it.
Yes, the one that participated in... Yes, they say, but please, what can I do? Where I have to go? And so we say, no, please. You have to, autonomy, you have this to do, maybe write the agenda together. That happens to us. And in CCK, it happened to you.
Sure.
No? About technology,
no,
they are not.
We don't have Melissa Lynch and that.
Yeah.
No, but in CCK, it also happened to him.
It's a teacher, middle school teachers.
Yes, these teachers, English teachers, no technology.
Mm-hmm.
then when people, when teachers, when you're faced with a problem, mm-hmm. unless you have at least some knowledge of the thing to be able to see what tools you're missing to, you know, to get there, you cannot even face or get confronted with that as something you want to learn.
Yeah.
So that's what happens, that's what she's saying.
Si no, no es un problema. Si no es un problema para una persona, para otra persona no es un problema.
The thing,
yeah. Por eso hay gente que no te dice lo que pide, tanto que, ¿qué hago, qué hago, qué hago? Porque eso no se convierte en un problema, porque directamente no tiene herramientas para poder realizar
el proceso. The knowledge, because they don't have any... Pero si llegan a la computadora y se anotan y todo eso...
That, that's the thing. The thing is that... No, pero el problema que tenemos que ver cómo lo resolvemos es que para poder aprender a usar una herramienta tenés que probarla.
The main
The thing is, if it's a tool, if I tell you how to use it, you never use it. So how we solve that problem? These are the ones which I have the problem with, yes?
Right.
Yes.
I can sense it's an issue.
Yeah. It's an issue because we have to work with teachers that are not tech teachers.
Yeah.
Those
you mean you are debating whether to let them discover, because if you show them the path you have done.
Yeah, they are not discovering and the tools.
What discover what?
What?
What's your role there? I mean, what are you doing while they are discovering?
I'm here if you need help with something, but if I tell you what to do with the tool, you're never using it.
Are you learning anything yourself?
Yes, lots of, because I need to know what they need, so I'm learning what they need, what I can do for them.
Do they see you learn?
That's what I took from what he said, that I have to moderate, be transparent about how I get to that. I'm trying to be transparent. I learn it by doing it. That's the way. So how much transparent can I be with the tool? I'm like sitting here trying, and it doesn't work well.
Well, whatever it is, maybe we here are already used to learning by doing.
No, that's the issue.
Well, but not everybody is. The way we were taught. Not learning by doing, but learning by being told.
It's like a paradox, you know?
Yeah.
¿Qué pasa si probás una vez decirle a alguien lo que tiene que hacer? Why don't we try it once? What I believe is that whatever works, works.
Mm-hmm. You can't
do it. No sirve.
Pero para eso tiene veces que han manifestado que no pueden. El problema con la tecnología es que se borran porque da demasiado temor. Cuando alguien pregunta,
pero no
es que es la realidad. Cuando as a facilitator, you can help if they ask, but if they don't ask, how you get in contact?
Yeah.
No está bien.
All the time learning, and they really appreciate that you take the effort to learn something. never, that vision exists in your time. Mm-hmm. And they do value. They see you from a different point of view. That changes. But it's the tool that you use and how you show them the tool mainly. Not the tool, it's really how you show them whatever tool you have at school. Because it's a personal point of view, I think that technology in the future are the mobile phones. Mm-hmm. These things that it's really banned here at every single school in Argentina. Well, it's unbelievably the things they can do with a mobile phone.
Oh yeah.
It's a small computer, but here some of the students they follow me on Facebook and it's just unbelievable. How can they in 1 millisecond show the whole school? And you don't realize.
They have shown the whole school, even though their technology has been banned, somehow the whole school knows.
Definitely, but the other day I found out that this is like he likes it. I think it's from here. There's no way. Okay.
So the question, coming back to the question, was do you tell them or not? Which caused a great deal of discussion. which was good, which was great. And you know, there is not an answer to that question.
We have
right?
There are not 2 points. 1 to 2 points.
Or 3.
Or 0, yeah. As many as you want to be.
But I've already, because I've already answered the question of what I said. There isn't a script, right? There isn't a method that works. Everybody is different. Every situation is different. You have a repertoire of tools and tactics that you use that you apply depending on circumstance. And, you know, it just, you have to look at the situation and make the judgment call. You know, because discovery learning is really hard. And a lot of people aren't up for it. Even people who are really good at discovery learning, there are many times when they just want the answer because they really wanted to be doing something else. And I'm like that. You know, I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff I put our computer people through. You know, and I write programs and software, and I know more applications than existed when any of them. And, you know, they introduce a new VPN network, and I'm sort of like, it doesn't work. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. It doesn't work. Yes, it does. Show me, you know, because I don't want to work through it out. I don't want to read manuals. I just want somebody to show me this, and this. Because I want to be doing something else. And sometimes that's the appropriate way to teach me. Most of the time, it's just, give me the disk, go away, I'll take care of it. But and so, you know, you need to be watching and responsive. You need to watch out for dependency. And people will become dependent on you because it's easier. And then you become their computer person. Right, and it sort of becomes, well, you know, and then it becomes a negotiation, right? You know, well, I can't, you know, we need some sort of exchange of value here, and you can't say it like that, because, you know, then it becomes crass and commercial, but it's sort of, I'm showing you this, what are you showing me? You know, and trying to draw out that sort of, and there are things you can draw out, but, you know, if they realize that, you know, every time you show them something, they're going to have to show you something. Eventually, they see the advantage of doing it themselves. So, you know, and that's a tactic that works with some people, doesn't work with other people. Other people will say, great, now we're in this full-time reciprocal relation. I'm still getting everything I want. Okay, that's fine. And you can't do that because there's more than one person in the world. So, you have to adapt. Every person is different. Every circumstance is different. There is no general answer. You need to learn to recognize when the help will be useful and when the help won't. And that's the expertise of being a teacher. That's the thing that they can't teach you in teacher's college, And that's the thing that, you know, your evaluations and that don't measure, but that's the expertise. And it's almost, it's like it's impossible to describe.
So, people, like, teachers really have to be geniuses in order to accomplish all these things.
Everyone has to be a genius. Not just teachers. This is what people don't get. Two things. Everybody has to be a genius, but everybody can be a genius. We all have this capacity. Yeah.
You just put in the extra hours on it.
Yeah. Like we, our minds, our brains are similar to each other, right? And we all have this capacity, you know, inherently. We're very similar to each other. But what happens is, you know, different things happen to different people to affect that capacity. Even before a child is born, that capacity can be affected by malnutrition. That capacity can be affected by, you know, alcohol. So you have a child with fetal alcohol syndrome. I've seen children with fetal alcohol syndrome. It's like, it's very sad. And like, how do you teach them? It's like, their capacity has been impacted before they were even born. They had that capacity, but the alcohol took it away. Smoking. I should be 6'4", but my mother smoked for the first month of her pregnancy because she didn't know she had me, and so now I'm only 6 feet. Sorry, Mom. But it's true.
Still in Argentina, you're really tall.
I know. And actually, yeah, should see me in Colombia. you know, it's, oh, I've lost my train of thought.
Everybody has to be a genius. Why? Because the world is complex enough now?
We can all be geniuses, we have the capacity.
Yeah, we have to be geniuses because every single discipline is complex. Teaching used to be really simple. You said the rule, the students repeated it. You said the rule, the students repeated it. You did that 1,000 times, and then the next day you would do it 1,000 times again. That used to be how people were taught, right? You know, even when I was being taught, you'd repeat things. One plus, there was actually a song, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4. I still remember it right back. You know, it was years before I actually figured out what mathematics was doing.
Yeah,
well, it took me a long time. And so, but, you know, when you're born, and when you're born, you're 1 year old, 2 year old, the nutrition you have at that age is very important, as you all know. A government can do more for learning by making sure that their children between 1 and 5, or even 1 and 3, making sure that they're adequately nourished in that time. That in itself would do more for learning than doubling the number of teachers. You know, make sure that they have the physical capacity to learn. I mean, learning is a chemical process. Hey, people forget this. But it's a chemical process. I emphasize this to people. It's connections forming between neurons. You need specific chemicals, like potassium is a big one. You need potassium in there. If you don't have potassium, you can't create connections. Okay, I'm oversimplifying. Sorry about that, chemist. But you know what I mean, right? You have to have proteins, you have to have minerals, you have to have vitamins. These things you need in order to be able to learn. Then over time, you know, you don't beat children, right?
No.
I'm just checking. I don't want to assume.
At school?
Right. Yeah. But, you know, like it's, you know, when children, it's funny, it's the funniest thing. Like you see children go to school their first day and they're all bright, they're eager, they're ready to learn, and they come home the first day. I'm never going back. You know, like their love of learning has been beaten out of them the very first day. this wonderful Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. I don't know if you've ever seen Calvin and Hobbes. I love Calvin and Hobbes because it's so perceptive. And Calvin is like that. He's all ready to learn. He's ready to go. And the teacher says, sit down, shut up, and conform. And that's totally the opposite of learning. Yeah. So, but if people have the capacity, you know, if they're not trained to follow orders, if they're not trained to conform, to do what they're told, to not be creative, then everyone does have this capacity. And routinely, we see children who are given the opportunity to become musical geniuses, computer geniuses. You know, it's not like to be very, very special to do this. It's that you have to have the opportunity. When you have the opportunity, then you have the capacity to do these complex things. You know, the greatest predictor, and the study after study after study shows this, the greatest predictor of educational outcome is the socioeconomic status of the parent. Right? Well, you think about it. Why is that? You know, because there's not some sort of magical transfer from the father's bank account to the child's brain, right? There's just the causal chain just isn't there. It's that they have more opportunity. They have books in the house. You know, they have parents that talk back and forth intelligently instead of just sitting there and watching reality TV. You know, that's that sort of environment. The expectations in higher income households are higher. The role model that the children have. They have parents that learn and they see them learn. So that's what creates the advantage. But that's very helpful because it means that with that advantage and with the proper nourishment, right, and protection from harm and things like that, all children can achieve this potential. It's not rocket science. It's not even hard. It's mostly a matter of political and social will. And it's very hard in my country to produce that political and social will. It's very hard, apparently even harder in the United States, and it's hard elsewhere. You look at the countries where education is very good, Finland. That social will exists. They make sure their children are fed. They make sure that, you know, income is distributed relatively equally across families. They make sure that they have good role models. They reward creativity and innovation, all of these things. And they're consistently the best students in the world. You know? So we have to be geniuses. The world is too complicated for us to be slow thinkers anymore. We cannot handle today's problems by learning lines. You know, to solve the environment by memorizing times tables, there's no way, right? But we can. We have that capacity. I'm sorry, I went so long for you guys. But she'll summarize in a sentence.
Dijo que los maestros tenían que básicamente hacer un montón de cosas. Y yo dije, bueno, tienen que ser genios. Y dijo, sí, todos tenemos que ser genios. Y entonces empezó a decir que el mundo es muy complejo para darse el lujo, digamos, de no tener genios. Que no se puede resolver la crisis ecológica con estudiando líneas de memoria de un libro. Que hay que ser genios, que hay que. Primero que nada, habló de la nutrición y cómo los chicos, si están bien nutridos en los primeros años de vida, eso hace que tengan la posibilidad de desarrollar su ser creativo más y desarrollar más la visión y el conocimiento que pueden adquirirlo. Y después, bueno, tiene como base social, ¿no? Que realmente todos los chicos están alimentados. Y habló de salario, de los países más desarrollados.
No es casualidad que a nivel socioeconómico produce chicos con aparentemente más inteligentes, mayores capacidades. familia, de padres, que hay libros en la casa, que hay, que se conversa, que
padres que aprenden.
No siempre.
¿Vos por qué te regalas el
compromiso? No, pues yo pobre la misma que tiene un grado de los 4 años.
Ah, sí.
Es como que la tengo. Así que bueno, y la verdad que me encanta. Siempre se me da televisión. Está, o sea, parece que es un gesto de juego. Ella no va a colegio bilingüe, yo igual le hago niños en casa, pero la idea es que lo aprenda de otra forma, que no lo está aprendiendo en el colegio, que es 100% tradicional. Y para ella son dos, es un juego. O sea, y la verdad lo que está haciendo es totalmente interesante.
Mira, te estás contestando lo que preguntaste antes de que hicieras en los juegos.
No, yo lo que creo que es todo 10 minutos.
Ah, justo lo que puedo continuar.
Pero tengo
que
hablar con
The long lunch. Today we're going to have the experience of the long session. I think it's
4
a.m.
You
have been
told. 4 a.m. That's pretty funny.
Yes, you work today.
Yeah. We're in my day today.
Apart from the 10 things that we really need to learn, are there any hidden 2 other points that you want to share with us?
What, and give up my advantage?
Yeah. So that we can all be geniuses.
You are in Canada, it's far away.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I don't know.
For parenting,
joking. I'm not the one to ask about parenting. I have 4 cats. I can tell you about
many kids.
Cats.
Cats.
So yeah, cats are really a lot easier to deal with, probably. Although they have, you know, you can. Things you just can't do with cats. You can't give a cat a bedtime. So,
cat. What's the future?
Hopefully long.
What about this tool that you are designing or something like that, Alejandro said?
Yeah. This is a project. It's to design a tool, a personal learning environment. Mm-hmm. And what this tool is intended to do is to help you manage all of your information and all of your connections that are stored on different sites all over the internet. Wow. You know how you have your photographs on Flickr, you have your Twitter, you have your blogs on Blogger, and then everybody else's photos are on Twitter or whatever. Right. This is a tool to allow you to access those and to work with those all in the same place. And the idea of the tool is that it's an environment and not a tool. And what do I mean by that? It sits in the background. So you do what you normally do. We don't want to change what people do. And I don't want to change your whole work process. If you use Word or PowerPoint or a drawing tool, or you know, you keep using it, and it's in the background. But when you need it, right, it's just a mouse gesture or a single click away, and then your information is right there. All of your feeds, all of your information from people you know, from sources that you read, sorted, organized, using an intelligent system that recognizes what you're working on and what you need to find out right there. And also all of your connections, your friends from all different networks are there in another pane or another panel, and a way to take anything you're working on right now and publish it anywhere. That's the basic idea. So there's some nifty, neat ideas behind the tool that will make it specifically useful for learning.
Then we will be geniuses. Yeah. We'll have that.
No, you'll learn to depend on the tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question. My English is not good, but I'm gonna try. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. I'm a kindergarten teacher. Yes. So I know that you didn't teach to young people to
right.
kids, no. But my question is, at what age or when or how, if it is a must to use the technology in kindergarten? It's not in discussion that in secondary or primary school you must teach and use the technology however. But in kindergarten, the keys is more on playing, not know each other and how to share things, not and not the must is not technology. So in this world.
That age, what you can do is like little stimulation because it's more important to be involved with the real world. She's saying that. And she's saying, I don't want them to be outside something.
Well, I don't think there's a first of all, the virtual world is the real world. So let's be clear about that.
Do you think that is the real world?
Of course it is.
It's part of
the
music,
not
part of the world.
Let me offer you proof. I'll prove to you right now that the virtual world is real. I'm sitting in this room.
They're gonna bake a magic.
They're proving that the real world is real by passing out croissants. I feel like I'm watching GE War. No, okay. Here's proof that the virtual world is real. I am sitting here. Right? You're all listening to me. Right? And some of you are actually believing things that I say. Right? A week ago, how many of you had ever met me in person? None. Not one of you. Would you have taken your entire Friday evening to come and listen to a total stranger talk about stuff?
No.
But you're here.
I'll have to Google.
You're here strictly and solely on the basis of your experience of me and then presumably other people in the virtual world. Your action in coming here shows that what happens in the virtual world is real.
Yes.
So I'm not so inclined to differentiate. There's a test that I like to, it's not something I invented, I heard it somewhere, but I've forgotten where I heard it. And the test is, how do you know when something that happened virtually is real? And the answer is, when the effect continues even after you turn off the computer, right? If something makes you laugh and you're still laughing after you turn off the computer, it was real. If something makes you cry and you're still crying after you turn off the computer, then it's real. And so that's the test. So I don't draw a hard and fast line between using technology and not using technology. Related to that point, children in kindergarten. I was in kindergarten once, so I have at least a kindergartner's memory of kindergarten, which is not really very reliable, I suppose. But I do know, even from having observed that room, all about to sneeze. Excuse me. That's the first time I've sneezed in Argentina. Funny. So there is, and she really is going to tweet it. Okay.
Of course.
I want to show you something. I'll show it to you because I have it here. This is not Twitter. We'll let her Twitter. Sneeze.
How I write sneeze?
S N
E E Z E
E E Z E. Oh, I'm so glad you say Z. You're learning English properly. Okay. I don't know if you can see this, but I took this picture while I was in there.
It's an ABC.
It's the ABC poster on the wall, right? Is that virtual or real? The picture on the wall.
It's real.
Is it real?
In the camera, it's virtual. On the wall, it's real.
If it was a computer screen on the wall just showing the picture, is it any different from the picture?
No.
Yes.
In what way?
Digital.
But what makes it different?
That
yeah, but suppose it
did. Be a picture of an
object. Suppose.
What's the point?
Well, the point is you use technology anyways to teach children, right? You use pictures on the wall. You use toys that they play with. You use little tables and chairs, which are so cute. You know, all of these things you already use. And it really doesn't matter whether there's a computer chip in them or not. Because that's not the basis on whether you're going to use it or not. That's not how you make that decision. Right? You have other reasons. Reasons that I actually don't understand why you use this thing rather than that thing. You know, you share a ball with the children because you want the children to learn, you know, motor skills, to kick the ball, to share the ball, to learn to play together. Does it matter if the ball has a computer chip in it and is GPS aware? No, it might be overkill, but it wouldn't matter, right? Would it matter if the ball made like nice musical sounds when you kicked it? That would be pretty cool, actually. Yeah. You know, it might be better, it might not. It's up to you to make that judgment, right? But does it matter if those musical sounds are virtual or digital, or whether there's a little violinist inside the ball? Well, I guess it'd be hard on the violinist, but, you know, it doesn't matter. So there is not a distinction to be made. And this is especially true outside the school, right? Because these children go home. I assume they go home. You don't put them out in the back. They go home, and the radio is on, the television is on, the parents may have a computer that they use, they may play a game, maybe they have one of those little Nintendo games, maybe they have an MP3 player or a simple, you know, I don't know what they have, but they have stuff. Even when you're 4 years old, you have stuff. It's little tiny four-year-old stuff, but it's still stuff. And these days, more and more of that stuff is digital. So the four-year-olds are being exposed to digital anyways. So the question is really, you know, what stuff, digital or not, is going to be useful in the education of these four-year-olds. And that's the basis on which you make the decision.
No, no diferencia de un tecnológico o no tecnológico. Lo que importa es cuáles de esas cosas van a ser útiles para educar a estos chicos.
Hoy, por ejemplo, con los chicos de 4 años, la googlearon. Seguí para investigar sobre ello. Bien, para la primera pregunta. Y estaban fascinados. Ahora, yo fui modeladora.
Si vos fuera lo de kids, de 4 years, they went to Google, stop. And they were
intentionalmente fue para otra modalidad de investigación.
Yeah, she tried to show them another way of investigating research.
Yeah. You know, it's a way of putting capacity into their hands. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for it.
Hay mucho a favor.
Yeah.
For example,
train airline pilots in flight simulators. Training in a flight simulator does make them better pilots because it's a more consistent kind of experience. So, you know, and flight simulators are so good that, you know, the 9/11, the hijackers used Microsoft flight simulators to learn how to fly airplanes. That worked. So, you know, it depends. The Wii is, you know, it's not the same as playing tennis because, you know, you're less mobile, you're holding a lighter device. You look at a little Wii tennis rackets, they're only like big. You wouldn't play tennis with one of those. So the motor skills are going to be different. But if you make the motor skills the same, then playing well with the Wii will help you play well in real life. So that's what I would think, you know. But it's going to depend, right? It always depends on the particular item. Well, we're beginning to lose people, so this is probably... Yeah, when people begin to leave the room, that's usually when I begin to take the hint.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Coming.
Yes, incredible.
It's been a pleasure.
I do hope this was helpful and useful.
Yes. Lots.
That some of the stuff that I said seemed sort of true. And even if it didn't, that's okay. I mean, it doesn't matter if you agree with me or disagree with me. You know, it's important that you make your own decision on these things. So, and it's important, I think, too, for all of you to see what I've said in that light, right? You know, I'm not the guru dispensing wisdom. I'm really not. I'm someone with a certain amount of experience and a point of view. And, you know, everything I say, you should evaluate against your own experience and determine for yourself whether it works or not. I think that's more important than anything, any individual thing that I can say. I know I don't have to say this, but I feel more comfortable if I do. Because I don't want people to just listen to me uncritically. It's not healthy.
No.
So, but thank you so much. I mean, you've done me quite an honor by spending your Friday evening with me here. Although I guess for you this is still afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
this opportunity is very open.
Yeah.
Well, it really has been my pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Do it again sometime.
We try to invite some men, but he said to your right.
Yeah. And the men stick together, yeah.
Lots of women in chat.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works out.
There's a lot of men who are teaching in Argentina.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially
in the days of teaching English.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, it's sort of, in Canada, it's still, I think, the majority women teachers, but there are, quite a number of men. But I think it still is majority for them. Great. Well, thanks a lot. And
when are you going?